Hi guys, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery, and I'm located in Van.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
Huzzah.
Alrighty, hello.
Hello!
Finish it
How
up
are you,
my,
Ryan?
Finish it up my old-fashioned here. Rachel did not want to give me a big ball of ice, so I have a bunch of ice cubes in here, and it's all melted, so.
Nice.
It was good, though. Yeah, I'm doing well. I was, it's nice to get back to the studio and throw a bunch this week, so I got a bunch of progress made the last 2 days in the studio, so that's been good. I need to catch up on some stuff tomorrow, maybe trim a bunch, and I unloaded a bisque kiln that just fired this week, so I got some oil bottles restocked and some other pieces, a custom order, so sitting pretty over here on the studio side of things.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't have another show until May, so that's I like this window of time to
that's so
be
nice.
Able to get that stuff done.
Yeah, for sure.
It feels like it's a lot of time, but I still feel a little pressure of like, I mean, there's other like trips and Sika's next week, so other things going on that are going to take my attention, but that's still a lot more time than I normally have during the typical week, so.
For sure. Yeah, I have a show in April called The Mod Market. And
where's that at?
It's here in St. George. So I'm sure it will be like all my other shows. A disappointment.
The mod market, like MOD?
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Is that short for something?
It's like modern market, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be fun.
You gotta have higher. You gotta be more positive. Go in positive, and then just hopefully
Ryan,
it'll carry you a little bit.
I'm going in realistic. Okay, we're not realistic.
Okay. Have you heard about it? How did you find out about the show or talk to somebody?
Joe told me about it. So yeah. I'm excited for it. We'll see. I don't know when it is. I forgot. But a lot of people are doing it, I think. So a lot of local artists. So that's exciting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I have some exciting news that happened today. Yeah.
Okay, what's new? What happened?
I made a cat door in my van.
I saw that on your Instagram stories. How did that go?
It went great.
Is it one layer you're cutting through, or did you have to cut through? Because it was kind of a shell of a van when you got it. So was it
so
literally just one layer of metal?
It's one layer of metal and then one layer of plastic. So the back has like a plastic sheet, the black plastic sheet that covers the side or the back. And so I cut that as well.
I heard that too.
I don't know what they're doing over there. Anyway, so I cut that as well, and
did you cut it with just like an angle, like a diamond angle grinder or something?
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever used an angle grinder. That was stressful.
It's kind of awkward. It like certain
it
angles,
is kind of because
if you're cutting it vertical, you're like tilted and
yeah,
and you only
want to
cut that
awkward.
Thing once, so.
Right, and I feel like I could have done it. So my buddy Chase is an amazing potter, but also owns a construction company, and he was like, you should use an angle grinder. And I was like, because I was planning on using a jigsaw, and because that's what I've used before, and I'm pretty comfortable with those. And he was like, no, you should use an angle grinder. And then he goes, but make sure you hold on to it, because it'll kick you, it'll break your wrists. I'm like, oh, thanks. Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't have a jigsaw here, and it costs like $100 to buy one, like $150 to buy one. And I was just going to buy one yesterday at Lowe's and like take it out of my van fund. But they don't price match to third-party mm-hmm. companies. They only price match to like
Lowe's or Home Depot kind of deal or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm not buying it here. Bye.
I'm sure Joe had an angle grinder, right? You just needed the right cutter.
And Joe, yeah, Joe had an angle grinder and he had a diamond disc. So,
That's great.
So I was pretty stoked and it did cut it very straight, which was nice. It was like super clean cut. Well, no, it wasn't a super clean cut. It like bent the metal all over the place, but it was super straight cut. And, and then I put weather stripping around it, and I put it around the other one, and I made a little suction, and I put a little a hinge on it, and then I put a lock on it so I can lock it for when we're driving, and then I put a little sticker with three cats.
I saw that. So is the door itself, is it just the piece that you cut out and then you wrapped it? Okay, that's what I thought. I was like, I was wondering what you were going to use unless you had like a, unless they make like a plastic sealed or like a, you know, like a, something that can suction to the.
I was going to do a cat door, like an actual cat door. I was going to put an actual cat door on it and then, there just wasn't enough space in the back of the van. So, yeah, I figure eventually maybe if I want to make it better, I'll make it better. But having a hole in your van on the side really doesn't do anything. It's like...
It's still a hole in the van, so, I mean...
It's still a hole in the motherfucking van. So,
I mean,
like,
and it's on the back, so if rain or something is coming down, it's at least...
On the way
the
out.
Movement, it's like, not going to be like on the side of the van and water's going to come down the side of the van and run into the crack and go in somehow. So,
I think it'll be fine. I mean, it's not. It's definitely not sealed well, but it.
Is there a big gap between the door and the plastic that you're talking about? Or is it like right
there? Yeah,
there's
like a 3-inch gap. It was a 3-inch gap.
Oh. So what did you fill that with?
I cut out the door and then I just kind of like flopped it over and it just like sat right there real nicely. So I just duct taped it on.
Oh, so you just have like duct tape going across all the way around it?
Yeah.
So it's not like sharp and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So.
Well, you had the weather stripping, but.
Yeah, well, I didn't do the weather stripping on the plastic, but because the inside doesn't really matter to me. Yeah, and so. It does not look great, but it doesn't look bad.
As long as I was worried about other animals going in and out of there, but it sounds like with the lock on it and...
Well, and I think that, like, I'm not going to be able to avoid other animals regardless, you know? If I had a cat door.
It just depends on how long it's open and stuff like that. But,
yeah, like if I had a cat door or whatever, so... but good news, Lloyd has been out of it and he has gone into it. So,
oh, that's good.
And I put a stool there just so he could kind of get used to it. He'll have to figure it out once, you know, life rolls around. But, that's why I put it on the back because he could sit on the,
the bumper. He could jump on the bumper.
He can jump on the bumper. So, yeah. I think it's going to be great. Actually, it's going to be more than great because...
Was there a reason that you made it or...
Yes.
Did you just...
This means I can lock my van and my cat can come and go. Like, previously I couldn't lock my van because I'd always have to have, like, an opening for him to come into the van. And now I can just leave that little door open, lock the van, and...
Safe and secure.
And secure. And also, this means that if I go out of town, like I'm going out of town to Encica, I can leave the van in the back and leave it open, and he can come and go as he pleases, and they can just fill up his water and his food. You know, it's not like a real big issue. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy about it. I've needed to have a cat door for a very long time, and it's
that seems like a good spot to put it, because I was a little worried. I was like, where do you put it? Because it sounded like you were maybe going to put it in the floor and then have him like go down and out. And then like, I was like, and then I thought there was a mention of like the front side, the passenger door, like down by the floorboard or something. Or
yeah, there was at one point, but that was nixed pretty quickly.
I'm sure there's a lot of other shit inside of a door then.
Yeah, it had to be on the back door or the floor. And the floor was just going to be a pain in the ass. We were going to use the angle grinder, and I was going to do like a 6-inch hole.
Yeah.
But the floor is ridged, so it has like up, down, up, down, up, down. Yeah. And so I'd have to figure out that, and then it's just like going to be a huge thing. Yeah. So this was a lot better of a solution. This was a much cheaper solution. Well, they're all pretty cheap, but it was a very cheap solution. I think it cost me $20. So.
Sweet.
Can't get much better
than
that.
Got creative with it. Hopefully it's weather tight. I mean, the only risk you really have is weather, I would guess, and other animals.
Yeah.
But you were going to have other animal potential with other anything regardless. Else like that, too. So.
Yeah. The only disadvantage is that animals can see it. Like, if it was under my van, they wouldn't necessarily know that it was there, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know if it was just open, if, like, smell. I mean, they would probably smell anyways, but being under...
Yeah.
Yeah, like how much would they actually smell from inside the vehicle? Yeah. Just a crack or whatever. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, that's my exciting news of the week.
Nice. Well, he'll get to test it out and we'll see how it goes.
Well, we'll see if he goes in and out during Inseca. That's the big thing, you know?
Yeah. So. Do you have multiple keys so you like or don't lose them or something?
Oh, yeah, I put one of them in a thingy, and then I put one on my keychain.
Nice.
Yeah, so if I lose my keychain, I'm fucked anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah. Wait, do you actually have multiple keys to your vehicle, or is it just
I do.
One? Yeah.
I do. I have two. Okay. I have the other one in a safe that's hidden in my van, and then it's got... I took, like, the battery out and everything like that, so...
Oh, yeah, that's good, because otherwise it wouldn't ever lock on its own, right?
Yeah.
If it's anything like ours, yeah.
Well, thankfully, the back of the van doesn't count as the vehicle. So, like, you can't have the key in the back of the van and it run the front. Like, you can't turn on the car. So
it has to be within X number of feet of the steering wheel or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of similar to our push to start ones, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Sweet. Accomplished.
Accomplished. Seriously, this is... been on my mind for maybe 5 months, and I'm glad that it's finally done. Sweet. It was a lot more simple than I thought it needed to be. So
that's good. We got some accomplished stuff today too. It's been like really good weather the last couple of days. It was low 70s today.
Ooh,
so
nice.
So it was like sunshine and beautiful. Did some walking around the block and stuff, and then we cleaned off the roof of the patio because it had all the leaves piled up from the fall. We did like the the leaf blower through the windows upstairs and got all the leaves out there. And then I had to rake them off the roof because it didn't blow all of them off. And Rachel cut the grass and put some weed feed stuff on the grass and cut up all the leaves. And yeah, I don't really like yard work, but if I could do it for like a couple hours at a time, it's like, okay, it's manageable. But
yeah,
that's what I get with having a big yard and all this stuff. It looks pretty, but maintenance, no thanks.
Yeah.
But, yeah. All right, should we talk about the show that I did? I just did my show this weekend.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Okay, so I did the Kentucky Crafted Market, which was, it's hosted by the Kentucky Arts Council, which is the like Kentucky Crafted program I juried into last year. It's through the Arts Council is through the government. It's like a government funded organization that helps with, you know, marketing and promotion and different opportunities. They have like grants and stuff like that through the state. So I juried into that in August, and then you get access to sell in this market. So it's folks that are part of the program, and then there's also some like guest vendors that can do it from Indiana and Ohio that are kind of like privately invited. Usually they're folks that have sold in it in the past, Typically they're through like Indiana guilds or Ohio guilds or whatever. So it's kind of like tough to get into if you're not in that program already. So, sold in it for the first time. Friday was a wholesale day. Saturday, Sunday was a retail day. So the public was able to get in there and shop. I don't know if I said it on here, but I was sending Becca and Heidi some info for the wholesale stuff because it was the first official like line sheet that I'd written with like terms and everything on there that I would give to clients. So that turned out pretty well. You all were very helpful with your back and forth and getting that finalized. So the wholesalers that were walking around were like, thank you so much for these. Like, you're so organized and prepared. I wish everybody had these. So, you know, that some people don't wholesale that much. So, you know, I'm sure it was kind of a tougher for some folks, but and some like Charlotte that was next to me does painting, so it's a little tougher. Like, her wholesale was 30% off of retail, but she had very select, I don't know if it was very select things that she had. I think it was certain sizes she was willing to do wholesale. Mm-hmm. But it's like those people a lot of times are not gonna have a lot of business for the wholesale day, and it was pretty slow anyways. It wasn't a super heavy traffic day Friday. It was still 10 to 5, and it was dead the last like hour and a half or 2 hours. There was maybe, you know, 6 or 7 buyers around the last couple hours or whatnot. But let's see, takeaways. I got 2 orders on the spot, wholesale orders on Friday, and then I got a third one that was for logo mugs with decals. So I'm working with them through email on that one. So that one will be about 30 mugs. And then I actually talked with another client on Sunday about some potential wholesale order that's in Louisville. So I got about 4, and then maybe another like 2 possibilities. And then I delivered a wholesale order at the show that one of my existing wholesalers came and picked up an order. So wholesale wise, I think I netted, if I add up all that, close to about $3,000 in wholesale.
Nice.
Maybe I'm trying to remember that 800. Is it $800 wholesale bottle order that I delivered? $300 bottle order, $950 order, and then the mug order is going to be about $700, I think. I think it's $2,500, $3,000, something like that, in wholesale. So that was pretty good. I was happy with it. I was worried I was going to be overwhelmed with it and come back home and then be like bogged down in orders and stuff, but it seems manageable, so...
Yeah.
That was wholesale day, and then Saturday, Sunday was really good. Saturday was really heavy. Sunday was a little lighter, but still manageable. I sold a little over 4,600 for the weekend.
Nice.
So it was really good for that time of year, and I've never done a show in March before, so I typically don't sell until late April or May. So having that extra money at that time of year is like a good boost just to like get my confidence going into the show season. And it got me a little invigorated to get to the May, you know, so that was really good. Hopefully I'll be back again next year. I don't think there's a reason I wouldn't be, but so I'm kind of heads down wholesale. And then I don't typically get people to like show up and just ask for commissions, but there was a customer that like wanted a utensil holder that matched a certain color that I had. So I'm going to make one of those for somebody. And then somebody wanted a quote on a couple like shallow bowls. And, so I might've had a couple other commissions out of the day too. So
nice.
But yeah, so pretty happy with it. And that's it.
That's it.
I did the lights for the first time. Deanna, from Glazed Confused Creation, It's Creations, right? At the end of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Deanna sent me some info about the light situation, because I don't know if she stole at it last year or somebody she knew sold at it that like needed lights, but she sent me some info for like the stands on the metal like plates on the ground, and then you have the poles come up, and then you have the the cross beam, and then you hook up like track lighting and stuff to it. So it's pretty simple. It worked. The electricity was a little iffy though. I used my like power inverter, which is just, it's just the thing like you would use if you're on a road trip for,
yeah,
you know, in the car, except you can plug it up to a battery. It's like a Ryobi one. You can plug up to a battery, or you could hook it up to a cigarette outlet or something else. And the batteries lasted like an hour and a half each. Luckily, I had like five or six, but I should have just paid for electrical and just plugged it up to the wall. But I could have done that, but I didn't pay for it, so I didn't want to like use the extension cord and like plug it up, even though there's a outlet behind me. So I was like,
yeah,
live and learn. I'm like, okay, I'll pay for electrical next year. Luckily, I had enough batteries. It wasn't that big of a deal, but.
Yeah.
But the lighting worked. It made it look really good, actually, because some of the areas were spotty. It's on basically like a concourse of it's the horse park arena. So it's like it's kind of like a small basketball arena, sort of. So we were just all around the concourse, and the lights were kind of like spotty in certain areas.
Was it inside? It was inside, right?
It was all inside, and they had the booth dividers with like the black curtains.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So everybody had the, you know, like a, I don't know, 8-foot curtain, mm-hmm, dividing each side. So it's a little iffy with the lights if you don't have lights right above you. So, but it worked out. It was pretty good. The lights worked out, and everything looked really good.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. All right. What else? Anything else new? Or are we?
No.
We ready to move forward?
I'm itching to ask my question.
Okay. All right. Becca has a question for me that I do not know about. Yeah.
I came up with my question. It's either, I think it's a twofold question. Okay.
Is it only for me?
No, it's for both of us.
Oh, okay.
But I haven't thought about it, so it'll take me a minute. Well, I have thought about one part. But anyway, if for everybody that doesn't know, this is coming out the weekend after Nsika, so, but this is going to be a question about Nsika. Okay, so.
What does that sound?
Oh, I'm sorry. okay, so, what are you most looking forward to at Nsika, and what tool are you going to buy, are you, like, itching to buy this year? If you're itching to buy a tool.
What am I most looking forward to? I think it continues just like this year. It's just seeing a lot of people that I haven't seen that I actually have time to just talk to for a period of time, and I don't feel rushed. I think that's just a general statement that I'm looking forward to. And I don't know. I wonder if it's going to be different than last year, because it's not like a home game, like we have limited time that we can be there, so I feel like it'll be a little bit more like thinking about where we're going next and how do we get there and all that. Like, I'm not as familiar with the area, and I've never been to Richmond, so I don't really know. I feel like time's gonna fly regardless, but hopefully the schedule's not so jam-packed that I'm like, damn, I wish, you know, I'm like putting aside that I have to see all the talks and stuff, because that's mm-hmm. just not of interest to me. So, you know, I think spending time in the vendor hall and just chatting with people for a little bit of time is, you know, or just, you know, hanging out after and chatting outside the conference is going to be enjoyable. Similar to what we did at like ClayCon West, you know, we're in the, at the Airbnb or whatever, and just hanging out and chatting for however long.
Yeah.
And then if you want to respond to that, and then I'll think about the tool.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't really love Nsika, but I guess it's probably the same thing. And seek is not like my favorite thing to do because it's really overwhelming and it's really tiring and there's a lot of people, but I'm really excited to do the demos. I think that's what I'm most excited to do. And just kind of like hang out with the speedball people because I really like them. And I'm really excited to talk to L&L. Because this is not the beginning of our ad, but I'm really excited to talk to L&L because they've got a new product coming out that I'm really stoked about. And
yeah, I want to find out more about this too. So
yeah, so we will keep you updated once we can. I don't know if we can or can't, but
not yet. I'm sure we'll have it on the podcast at some point, though.
Yeah,
they'll definitely want us to talk about it.
Yeah, super stoked about it. So I can't wait to talk to them about that and get all the deets. And yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. Okay, Tool.
Ooh. The only thing that comes to mind that I definitely want to get, because I can't just get it at any clay store because not all of them carry them, is another Mud Tools metal rib that has texture on it.
Okay.
So I got that one that you got me
last year
that you gave me last year. And it's one of the, like, it's like a DP2 or something. I think it's like a, I think it's like deep pattern or something like that.
Yeah.
And they have, I think, three different types. I'm looking forward to getting another one of them. And that's just like a simple, you know, a simple thing, but maybe it's PB. Pebble drawing stainless rib. DP0 is smooth, and they got some different textured ones. Yeah, I'm looking forward to some different textured ones.
Autumn is like just purring.
Can you hear her?
Yeah, she looks so cute with her little bow tie. Hi.
Hi, Auden. So cute.
Ooh, you've got like a purring background. We're just gonna keep it. Anyway, what I'm looking forward to the most is I want to get one of those carving tools, the Hinsing.
Oh, is he gonna be there?
I think he should be.
How do you say that?
I think it's Hinsing. So I mean, if Bison Tools was there, I would.
Have you tried Dolan Tools? I've never tried Dolan trimming tools.
Oh, I love Dolan trimming tools, but they wear down, and I need.
Do they wear down worse than a Kemper, or is it like Kemper and a half?
I think it's all the same. Well, no, they wear down less. They definitely, they're way better than Kemper. Let's be realistic about this. Okay. But
Bison's the top of the top, right?
What?
Bison's the top of the top one. That's the one where it's like one guy that makes them and they're on back order for like 5 years or something like
that. Yeah. So, and then, okay, here's something that I don't know the backgrounds of this, but like,
I don't want to talk shit on it, but I don't really know the status. Like from what I know, you can't get one and I wouldn't expect to get one.
Okay, so, yeah, so here's what happened. So, like, Bison starts making these, blah, blah, blah. They're the tungsten carbide tools, right? And then Xinxuan Lin Ceramics, it's HSIN. HSIN dash CHUEN, Xinxuan. He also makes tungsten carbide tools, and I think people got mad at him for making tungsten carbide tools because he was ripping, quote-unquote, ripping off Bison tools. But, like, bro, you can't buy Bison tools, so, like...
Oh, I see.
Like, I guess
Are the ones you're trying to get. I thought you were trying to get the ones that are kind of like a right-angled chattering tool, but they're also trimming tools. I thought that's what you were talking about.
No, I just want a straight, I want a looped carving, I want a loop trimming tool.
Oh, I see. Tungsten carbide loop tool.
Yeah, because I have the right angle one that, like, I have a Bison, but, like, that was right before he stopped selling them, like, to people. And I'd like to get one of the looped ones so that I can carve on, like, softer clay. So, I want the pear-shaped tungsten carbon.
Ooh, I was just looking at that one.
Yeah, so I mean, that's honestly, what I want.
If you get some life out of it, $85 for a trimming tool, like, is it one of those where you don't have to
yeah,
sand
you don't
it
have
and, like,
to you don't have to sharpen it.
Sharpen it, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And I just, like, there's a lot of people that, like, don't like this guy because he quote unquote stole the design, which I would venture to say there's plenty of fish in the sea and Bison.
Oh, he sells just replacement blades too.
Yeah, there's, and he sells
just a pear-shaped replacement,
like,
blade.
Clearly, he's like got some good shit going on because he's like, it's a good product. So I don't know.
Yeah, I can see where it could be iffy for some people, especially if they've had the tool or they know the guy or they have good, high respect for the person who does the Bison. But I don't know enough about the situation. I just know enough from Clay Buddies of it's literally one guy making them and the demand is so high he can't keep up. And
right.
Like, it's one of those situations where if something happens to you and you can't keep up, then, like, what do you do?
Yeah. So, like, let's say Bison is at Inseca this year, I'll buy a Bison tool. But if he's not, I'm getting the other one.
I wouldn't think. With all the people that supposedly are waiting on Bisons, I would think it would be in bad business for him to be at the Inseca selling tools.
That's what I would think.
Because I would think there's other people that have already paid or are waiting.
Yeah. So.
What do you think about this one that's kind of a D shape?
I don't know, man.
I kind of like the right. I don't know. D shaped tungsten. Are these the same? Loop tool with small mopane handle? Wouldn't it? Diamond file. Oh, the diamond file is separate. What do you use a diamond file for?
I imagine to sharpen things. Tools.
Oh,
maybe if it does get, like, I think they will get dull, but it takes a minute for them to get dull,
Okay. That makes sense.
Like, my Bison, I don't think it's ever gotten dull, and I trim on almost dry all the time. So.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Have you ever used one? I've got one that's kind of an L shape, but it's very thin at the top, and I don't know what to use. I don't know if it's, like, if it's meant to be a dry trimming tool.
Yeah, that's what I have.
That aren't loop. I just don't understand.
Yeah, that's what I use. I use the L one, the L shaped one.
Okay, is it, like, really small? Like, if you looked at it, if you looked down the handle, like, the tip of it is only not even half an inch wide.
No, mine's rounded. I don't know.
I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know if I'm supposed to use this to, like, undercut a pot off the wheel or if I'm supposed to use this to trim something, because it's the angle is weird. Like, I don't know what angle. Maybe that's just the learning curve of knowing how to use it, because you have to get the angle right so that you're not, like, scraping the clay off. You're, like, cutting the clay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a little different than what I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
I actually, like trimming tool-wise, I just use, like, if I'm using the speckle clay, I use the diamond core ones a lot because I feel like they're sharp. I don't trim a lot of pots, so, something that's...
I prefer Dolan. I prefer Dolan if I can do it, but that's also the same kind of situation. It's a one-man situation, or maybe two. So she's.
They typically come to Inseca?
I don't know if they were there last year. She's down in Arizona, but I think. But she's. Yeah, like, I think she's having a hard time keeping up too, just because the demand is so high and she's got a good product,
Mm-hmm.
So.
They're all marked as sold out on their website, or the 300 series that I'm looking at. But maybe that's because of Inseca. They're stocking up so they can sell directly to people.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if Dolan's there, I'll probably buy a Dolan tool too, because there's certain things that I like. I like the square one. But
the heavy duty Dolan is made from high carbon knife steel. But these are $16, so like that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
That's probably like the step up from Kemper.
Yeah.
That lasts longer and they're not gonna
They're definitely it. Better than Kemper for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
But they're also hard to get, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, handmade tools. Did you see that Hope Lemiancy Smith is opening a company with Jeff Campana?
Yeah.
Sweet. Blue Bucket Tools. We'll see what's going on there. It seems like a perfect fit, so congrats to Hope.
I wonder, are they going to have a booth at Inseca?
Did you see, so she had some stories about this. She's going to have, because their first thing is a bat system, she's going to have some at Inseca with her. Like, a few.
Oh, okay.
And it'll be like, I'm posted up here, come see me, and I can, you know. She'll have some carrying around with her. I don't know how many she's carrying around, because if it's like a bat system, that seems kind of bulky and heavy, but.
Yeah.
Could you see her being not, one of those, like, cart ladies where she's, like, pulling a cart with, like.
I love that. Love that. She, it's like just the outer bat for the tiles, you know?
Is it? And then you can purchase the tiles from, you know, hey, go here and purchase tiles or.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see. She's been keeping it pretty tight-lipped, but she did reveal that, so it seems like a perfect fit for her. So congrats to Hope.
Yeah. It's essentially the same bat system as mine. Mine is just an inch bigger.
Yeah. I wonder what it's made out of. Did she say?
I don't think she said.
We can see her next week and see what she says.
Yeah.
Maybe she can show us what it looks like.
Yep. All right.
Yep, yepers.
Yep. So, let's talk about kilns.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I really appreciate is having like one of the one of the rough. No, what's the name of the screen that's so fancy?
Genesis.
Oh, see, I was in the God. Right, like...
I was like, L&L? I don't know.
Anyway, the Genesis controller, like, I would be really... You know, I've had a lot of opinions about Genesis controllers in the past, but I think that one of the benefits... to them, and what's kind of nice is that like you can see how long you're firing for, and like I just, you know, changed out some elements and like I could see how long the kiln was firing for, and like see if something's wrong with it still, or if it fired the right amount of time, because it says how long it should be firing for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. And, get a Genesis controller on every single L&L kiln. It's like a $300 upgrade at the other kiln companies that rhyme with Schmutt.
You just have to come up with other names that rhyme with it? And we'll just keep throwing those out there. I just started to take some notes with the controller, because I wasn't and I probably could do this. I could probably look in the manual or look on their website to see how I can look at historical firings or something like that. I just started a basic kiln. It's nice to not have to have like a big fancy kiln log. I've just been keeping just a one line item of what firing type it was and how long it took, and pretty easy. It's nice to be able to see the graph too of how it's going to progress.
Right.
Also, one thing that I learned that you can do on the fly, because I did this the other day. One, I'm trying a lower bisque temperature. So Erica was in the studio and she was like, hey, did you try that lower temperature? Cause I was going to, normally I go to 06 and I was listening for Flux Sake, and they were talking about, technically, you can go lower. Like, it's not that much difference in what's happening with the clay between this temperature and this temperature. So, I'm trying it at 08. And
I will say that, to pause you, well, never mind.
The absorption's different, so, like, the glaze
application is different. It is different, so the glaze is
That's
different.
The main thing to consider, but, like, what's going to come out of the clay is not going to be that, like, fluctuate.
Right.
But you can change the... You can change the kiln firing settings on the fly after it's already started. So I just went in there and hit, like, edit program, changed the, you know, I can change the hold on the first segment. If I'm like, oh, I want to hold this a little bit longer, or, oh, I want to go to the last segment and change the final temperature of what it gets to. I did that on the fly, and I could, you know, it readjusted, so.
That's nice.
Pretty sweet. I didn't have to click through all. I didn't have to stop it and click through all the steps and do all that stuff. So
yeah,
that's pretty sweet. I double checked it because I was like, "There's no way it just registers this immediately, right?" But I like looked at the graph and like saw the segments and like it looked good. So I was like, "Sweet." Yeah, that's the Genesis.
Not the Olympic. The Genesis.
Not the Olympic. I think Olympics do have Genesis. It's just not.
You know, when I said Olympic, I wasn't even thinking of a kiln. I was thinking of, like, I remember Genesis was some sort of, like, ancient something. And, like, I was thinking, like, Olympic Greek god situation.
Oh, and so we should just call it a different Greek god. Like, maybe we should come up with a Greek god name for the other. And then it's like the opposite
it of is the like Genesis. The yes. But anyway, so yeah, and then you, if you do get in a snag, you can always look it up on their website, and their website is
hotkilns.com.
And I mean, like, dude, I can't wait to dump my Brut and get an L&L, honestly.
Wait, oh, you're talking about the small guy. You're talking.
Yeah, because they're going to get to it eventually, and I just cannot wait. Can't wait.
Okay.
Cannot wait.
All right. Yeah. Looking forward to that.
Looking forward to that day.
Yes.
Anyway, what?
Moving on.
What is your favorite color? What is the square root philosophy of a African swallow?
Okay, so we have multiple questions from Sandrine at French Frog Pottery. I believe she emailed this to us, so thanks for sending this to us. It reads, as I'm growing my pottery business, I have some questions I hope you'll want to answer. So this is like three questions. We can take them step by step, but I'll read all of them and then we'll go through them. So the first one reads, last year I kept hearing that sales levels were down compared to past years. It was my first full year, so I didn't have the comparison. Do you feel... Whoop, I just burped. Do you feel that it was down? Part two reads, I've been seeking primarily at a farmer... Oh, I think that's supposed to be selling. I've been selling primarily at a farmer's market and a few local themed markets, Halloween, Christmas, etc. This year, I'm looking to expand into other venues in hopes to increase my sales. Do you think that juried events tend to yield better sales than non-juried? And would art festivals also be worth it? And then the last part reads, other markets mean traveling outside of my state. How do you deal with sales tax? Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
I need to look up where Sandrine is located.
Yeah. Man, I still need to do my taxes.
Ugh. I need to as well. Oh, I can't just look up Sandrine.
I just know it's going to be rough this year.
Mm-hmm. Like you're going to owe money?
I have no idea.
Clarksville, Tennessee. She's in Tennessee.
Tennessee! I love it.
That's probably not too far from Memphis, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, because then she would be going into Arkansas and stuff like that. If she was... Tennessee, I feel like all the Tennessee, like, the big areas of Tennessee are really close to other states. Like, the big
She's right on the border of Kentucky, actually.
Oh, in Kentucky. Okay.
Yeah, it looks like she's... I mean, she's not that far from Nashville.
Okay. Like, on the way to Nashville from your parents' house.
She's like... she's more like central Kentucky, like south of central Kentucky, sort of.
Okay. Cool.
Maybe that's more eastern. I don't know. Anyways. Yeah, so she'll be going to Kentucky and maybe some other neighboring ones there. Okay, so how did you feel about sales? Did you feel a general sentiment from customers of they were picking and choosing what they were purchasing a little bit more?
As someone who's had the shittiest sales they've ever had this year,
In 2024 and 2023,
I feel like 2023 was garbage for me, except for when I was selling with you, because you're some anomaly that's like...
I'm not an anomaly. I just sell at a lot of the same shows that I always sell at.
This show was new, and you never sold at this show before, so shut the fuck up.
But I had a lot of customers in Lexington already.
Okay, fine. Anyway, I feel like this year was down as opposed to last year. Not only in the money I've made, but in the money I've spent. Like, I'm looking at my sales a lot. Like, I'm looking at my spending a lot tighter. But also,
oh, when you were, obviously. Did you get through a point where you were prepping your expenses and stuff from last year? Yet for taxes, did you spend more in 2023 than 2020, like significantly more, 2023 versus 2022?
Oh, I'm sure I did not. I haven't done that yet, but I'm sure I didn't. I'm pretty tight on my expenses, but I think that, like, generally, I think that people are a little bit tighter with their pocket money, their money, especially on frivolous things. You know, like, I sell earrings as opposed to cups. And people, for some reason, can, you know, a lot of people can splurge for a cup but won't splurge for earrings. And a lot of people will splurge for earrings but not for cups. So it really, you know, it depends. But I've been talking to a lot of different sellers, and they would all agree that this year has been rough. Like, this year, as I mean 2023 and the this beginning of 2024. Year, yeah. So, but I also don't think that that matters. If it's your first full year, I think you should just start clean and don't even think about
this. Yeah, I think comparing to yourself is the best way that you can compare, because yeah. I don't think it benefits. I don't, because we're talking a little bit about like gut feelings too. We're talking a little bit of like customer sentiment. How much can we notice it versus our actual numbers on paper? I mean, there's a lot of different factors that go into whether you know, are selling better or worse than last year. Like, on average, some of my shows I did sell less in 2023 than 2022. You could also say 2022 could have been a little bit of a, like, coming out year of a lot of people getting out and spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
After, like, the hangover of the pandemic and whatnot. So, you know, that could have been an anomaly too. So I think it's kind of like ebbs and flows.
Always,
you know, and you know, if you average the two of them out, would, you know, did it kind of give you a false sense of like what to expect because of the outrageous 2022 sales for some people? You know, I certainly had some of those shows in 2022, and then 2023, I'm like, okay, I need to manage my. Once I got a few shows in, I was like, okay, I need to manage my expectations of what I actually think is realistic, because there were some people that were a little tighter. But I think I noticed it less at the, I don't know. It depends on the items you're selling and what your price points are, because I think at the art shows I was selling at, I felt less of it because people came to buy art, and that's like, you know, they came right to spend some money because that's what the show is. It's an appreciation for art and, you know, local artisans and things like that. So I think those buyers tend to be planning to spend some money.
Yeah.
And if you're at maybe a local neighborhood market or you know, a craft fair or something like that, I think that's probably where you're going to notice more of an impact on the sales.
Yeah. Something that's more consistent. Markets. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know, those people, maybe they go out for the day and they plan to take the kids out and, you know, go out, have a, maybe they're going to have a beer and, you know, get some lunch and spend maybe 50, 75 bucks. And they have to pick and choose where they're going to spend it. You know, there's, you're probably less likely to get a splurge purchase at those kind of events mm-hmm. when people are a little bit more conscious of what they're spending and, you know, they're trying to enjoy the day, but they're not trying to splurge too much. And, you know, whereas people can splurge at the art shows and,
right.
You know, that kind of goes to your second question a little bit, but, yeah, I mean, overall my sales were better than the previous year, but I think for me, it's just, I do a lot of the same shows consistently and I'm building on,
yeah.
I'm building on that consistency, that customer base. I'm growing it little by little. I'm making more connections year by year. I'm getting better with selling. I'm getting better with my products. I'm raising my prices a little bit each year. My booth setup's a little bit better of like what needs to take precedent on the tables based on, you know, a lot of, you know, how my previous shows have been doing in that area, what tends to sell more. I have a lot more data around, hey, what did I sell last year? What products sold the most? What colors sold the most? And I definitely look at that and I tailor like what I'm making and what I'm bringing and how I'm setting my booth up based on what I did the previous year. Because a lot of those customers, if it's an art show, a lot of those customers are going to come back year after year. So I think the more data and the more information you have, it could help you make a little bit smarter decisions as you're going. If you're doing the same shows over and over, I don't know how to put a value on that and how to put a hard, this is what I should expect. But if I'm raising my prices and everything is about the same, I should expect to sell about the same amount that I did the previous year. And then hopefully a little bit better because my skills have improved. My quality of work has improved. My business abilities have improved. So I set those expectations for myself and hope to meet them. And then use the recent shows to kind of gauge, like, okay, are people spending as much as last year or not? And that's kind of how I set my expectations. But I'm always fairly positive, I would say, going into these. And I think a lot of it, we do sell luxury goods at the end of the day. Like, people don't need to buy mugs.
Right.
Who needs another mug or who needs another oil bottle or whatever? But I think if you can... if you can talk to them and they get a sense for why they want to buy from you, whether it's you that they like or the, you know, the product is nice and you talk about it well and they feel like you're passionate about, you know, what you're making and it's, they feel it's of quality for what they're looking for. Or, you know, I think you can get those buyers where, you know, just having it on a shelf in a store and there's no personality behind it. There's no person behind it.
Right.
You don't really have that advantage that we do as small business owners where you can actually talk to the customer as the person who makes it. So
I also think that, like, to the point of, like, she's saying, you know, comparing, this is my first full year, so I didn't have a comparison. I think you should revel, or maybe, like, I don't know the right word. I think you should be excited in the fact that it is your first full year and you should be happy that you've made any money at this point, because those people that make a bajillion dollars their first year, that's not realistic. And it's not realistic for everybody, is what I'm saying. Like, in my first full year, I made barely any money. And I thought having $150 during the day was a great day, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, Ryan did the same. He did not have great, great shows his first full year. And now look at him. He's saying $4,000 is a shitty show for him. So, like,
no, I didn't say it was a shitty show. You said that was a shitty show. I said that
I'm just kidding.
I was ecstatic.
I'm kidding. But, like, you know, it's really important to put things into perspective and to realize that the fact that you've done it for a full year is a congratulations all in itself. And the fact that you're, like, signing up for next year is still a great thing, you know? And you'll only do better from this, whether it be better work, but you know, like you may have a rough year sales wise, but you know, this is a really good start.
It doesn't mean you're not progressing because your sales should not be the main gauge of like whether you're progressing as a person, as a maker, how you should feel about your work. You should still feel good about your work and feel happy about the work that you're producing.
Yeah.
Even if your sales don't completely reflect it.
Yeah. I mean, look at my stuff. Like these are the worst sales I've ever had and I'm making the best stuff that I've ever had. So, I mean, does anybody know why? No. But it, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, I can still be proud in the work. I'm not really proud in the sales, but I'm proud in the work. And even though, like, yeah, I don't look too much on last year as I do forward. I feel like this is mostly what I'm saying is like.
Yeah, I think
don't dwell in the past.
Having the year under your belt, I mean, you're still figuring shit out. Like,
yeah,
you know, early on. You know, my booth looked like shit. Talking to people, I didn't know what to talk. Like, I didn't know how to talk about my stuff or what. Like, I had a mishmash of shit on the, like, not shit, but I had a mishmash of pots that didn't really have, it didn't look consistent. You know, I just, you know, looking back, it's one of those things you kind of cringe at. But it's also like, hey, that's where I had to start to improve from. So, you know, yeah. You have to start somewhere. You have to get those repetitions under your belt. You have, like, that's why I think the shows are the best way to sell your stuff, because you can get the most like information talking to people, get like real reactions, and also test yourself to see how do you do with the actual public, because I think it's a little tough when there's a screen between you and you're selling online. You don't really get a sense of how people feel about it, and you can't get a true like gauge of, you know, their reactions when they open it, and you know, when they're get the story behind, like, why did they get it or what drew them to it? Or, you know, they get to see all of your stuff and that's the thing they picked from your stuff. Why did they pick that?
Yeah.
You know, it reminded them of something. And I think those little moments are things that you should build on and, like, get you excited about why you keep doing this.
Yeah. And it sounds like in your question, you're, like, doing the right things, you know? The fact that she says, or they say, I've been seeking primarily at a farm, like selling primarily at a farmer's market and a few local themes markets, like that's exactly how you should start. I personally think. Like,
I think so too. I think
it's a great way to just like figure out your whole system and figure out what you're doing. And then this year I'm looking to expand into venues and hoping to increase my sales. Like that's literally exactly how you should do it. And to that, I think juried events do tend to yield better sales, but not all of them. I'm sure mm-hmm. Ryan can really elaborate on this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll go to the second question. We'll read it for the foot. Yeah. Been selling primary farmers markets, local themed events. Looking to expand into venues in hopes of increasing. Do you think juried events tend to yield better sales than non-juried, and would art festivals also be worth it? I'm not sure how an art festival differs from a juried event. I kind of see them as one and the same, but
well,
kind of makes me think
they're
of
not.
Art shows.
They're not.
What is art festival? What does that mean?
Like an art festival is like
to you.
I feel like an art festival is like Ann Arbor and like specifically art show, as opposed to like I did that juried festival down in California, and it was still juried. I had to jury to get into it, but I would not consider it an art show.
Okay. Art festivals are still juried, so they're still under that juried event category, but there's other ones that are not art show.
Yeah.
I would call it like an art fair, art show.
Craft fair.
Yeah, so juried would be like a craft. We're talking like single day craft fair.
Yeah.
Or the monthly markets like Westside Market or something like that that were...
Yeah.
The monthly thing. Okay. Yeah, I think you're in the right boat with the farmers markets and stuff like that. I think keeping those manageable and not getting overwhelmed, it builds confidence in your booth, because you don't need hundreds of pieces for this booth. For a one day short term farmers market or a local themed market, like if it's the holiday festival or whatever, Small Business Saturday show, like you don't need hundreds of pieces to be there at this one day event, and it's probably a reasonable booth fee. You're not spending $200 for a booth for a show that you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I spent $200 to be here, so I'm kind of like doing my best. But like, you know, I think my first show was a juried show. It was like 10 minutes from my parents' house, and it was an art show, but you know, I kind of dove in there. I didn't really know about the markets of like farmers markets and stuff like that. So, you know, I kind of went that route, and then you just can't take advantage of it as well as if you can't take advantage as much when you could have had other shows under your belt beforehand.
Yeah.
So like you pay $200, you have a better chance of having a little bit better of results when you actually know how to set your booth up a little bit better for customer flow, and also, you know, be prepared for, you know, whether, you know, your tent is actually a good quality tent or decent tent. That's, you know, I had like an orange top tent the first one, and it probably didn't help the look of my inside of my booth or the outside of my booth.
I think, and also I think it matters where you are, you know, like, I know somebody who did the farmer's market, and she would make $3,000 at the farmer's market every week. And if you're making $3,000 at a farmer's market every week, you don't need to do another fucking show, you know, like, yeah.
Especially if that's consistent. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't expect $3,000 every week, but...
Like, if you're in a tourist town, like, if you're in a tourist population where different people are showing up to the farmer's market every single week, then that might be a great setup for you. And it, what, $25, $45? Like, I pay $45 here. But, like, you know, $45 bucks...
typically it's going to be less than $50 or,
like,
you know,
$40. I guess also, yeah, you have to consider the markets that you're doing. So, like, don't fuck up a good thing. You know, if you're doing super well at a farmer's market, stay at the fucking farmer's market.
And and don't feel like you have to feel bad about, like, oh, where do you sell? I sell at a farmer's market. Like, don't feel like you have to prove yourself to be in this different,
yeah,
like, bracket of status because you're in a juried art show. Like, you still had to get accepted in the farmer's market. There had to be a reason for them to have you join them. So... like, if you're selling, you know, I do some of the farmers markets every now and then, and I'm happy to get $600-$700 because it's a local one. It's down the street. It's 9 to 1 on a Saturday. Like, I can ask them a week before if I can do it. And if they say, yeah, I can be there, like, it's kind of a show filler for me, and it's low effort. It's one table. Like, I feel like if you can sell a few $100 at a farmers market,
you're not
like pressed for time, and
yeah,
you know, you don't have all these other obligations. Maybe if you have kids and stuff and the weekends and it's tough for that, maybe it wouldn't be worth your time and your money. But, you know, if you're figuring this out, like, that's a great way to get your repetitions in, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, like, definitely, I think you should increase into other venues, of course, but I would keep doing the farmer's market at least this year, just to see how it goes, and to, if you can, and just to kind of like, because I bet your sales will be better this year at the farmer's market than they were last year, because people will know you, and they'll be like, oh, I need to get this spoon rest for my sister Kelly because it's her birthday tomorrow, and it's like, you know, they come
they
to you.
They can count
for
on
that.
You to be
yeah.
there.
Yeah, but like, yeah, I mean.
I think it also... yeah, just because you did that doesn't mean you need to, you have to completely leave it. Like, okay, I did farmers markets, now I'm on to juried shows, so I'm not doing farmers markets ever again. It's nice to, like, keep little bits because it gives you a confidence that there's a set amount of money I tend to expect from the, and I can anticipate is, like, pretty realistic. I can sell a few $100 at this show because I've done it a few times.
Yeah.
So maybe you know, okay, let's say you have, let's say you did 6 shows last year and 4 of them were farmers markets, 2 of them were themed ones. You know, maybe you do 8 shows this year or 10 shows, and maybe you keep 3 of those farmers markets, and then you sprinkle in, you know, maybe you keep one of the themed ones, and then, like, So half or two thirds of your shows that you do are ones that you've done before that you're confident in that you feel good about doing again. And then maybe you trickle in a quarter of them that are new, or like, you know, a third or maybe half. I mean, depends on what you can handle, but I think it's good to like add in a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
So you don't go, hog wild with just changing your whole schedule, because it's so much up and down, and the risk is sometimes not worth it if you don't really know what to expect from it.
Yeah. And shows, I think that Ryan has demonstrated this very well, that shows are, the more you do them, the better they tend to be. So, like, they maybe have potential the first year, but maybe you didn't do as well as you thought you would. And then the next year you come back and you do better. And the next year you come back and you do better and better and better and better and better. So, like, don't put all of your, like, if you, I tend to do this. If I tend to, like, have a really shitty show, I'm like, I'm never doing this show again. This is awful. And I think that that's where me and Ryan differ. And Ryan's like, no, I think I'll stick it out. I think I'll...
I'm willing to stick it out. You know, maybe I don't sign up. Yeah. If it's a monthly one, maybe I don't sign up. You know, maybe last year I signed up for four. Maybe I don't do four this year because, I'm willing to do two. Okay, I had a good time in June and August, but July, August. Fuck July. It's so fucking hot during July. I'm not even going to do that one in July.
Yeah.
It's okay. I can do August. I can do June. It's fine.
Yeah, I think that that's really important, too, just to you know, don't write it totally off at the beginning, you know, because a lot of the reason
and there's like weather. I mean, weather plays a factor. You got to, you know, gauge that, you know, be realistic about that. If it's a holiday weekend or something, like, there's things that affect reasons why shows are good or bad. It could have been you were in a weird spot. But also, the more you do a show, like, the more the organizers probably know who you are. They might be willing to, especially if you're kind to them, they might throw you a bone here and there. Like, the West Side Market that I do now, or have been doing for, like, 4 or 5 years, like, they give me a corner booth every single time.
Yeah.
I don't have to pay extra for that. They give me a corner booth. The organizer has bought some of my stuff. She also knows that my work is a good asset to the show. It like builds the quality or the standard of the show to have it there. So she puts me on a corner. She knows that I'm like, I'm organized. I'm going to show up. I'm not going to be a problem. I'm not going to have issues. I'm going to follow the procedures, all this stuff. Like, be a good artist and a good person for the organizers that will appreciate you, so that they will, like, you know, I think it helps. It can help you in the long run, for sure.
God, you're in such a great spot, especially if you're doing pottery. You're in such a great spot to be selling pots. Like, the middle of the country is such, well, the Mideast of the country is such a great spot to sell pots. And if you do it right, you're going to do well, you know? And, like, just, I think... Yeah. Slow and steady wins the race as far as, like, how you know, how, like, how you grow in this regard, I think.
Yeah, she's not too far from Nashville. Nashville, I know they have some shows. They have, like, Tennessee Craft, and those are bigger shows. But I know, like, Bowling Green, Kentucky's not too far from you. I'm sure that's, there's probably some events around there. Paducah, Kentucky might have some stuff going on. I don't know how big Clarksville is, so I'm not really sure what's going on there, but... It seems like a, not a tiny city, but, you know.
Yeah.
There's a state park there, and, okay. It's right about Fort Campbell. Maybe there's some military kind of folks around there. Military families. I don't know. But yeah, if you want to reach out to me too, I've got a list of shows that I can send you that are, I mean, a lot of them are going to be in Kentucky, like Louisville, Lexington, that area, Berea, stuff like that. But I've also said this before. If you know somebody that's like in your area that you consider a peer and like respect and like want to be where they are with like shows and stuff, I would suggest looking at the shows that they do and maybe doing some research on some of those shows. Like maybe pick three or four, like, first off, look up the shows. When are they? How big are they? What is the, like, venue look like? How do the, you know, what other kind of artists are in it? Like, what can you expect from it? How much are you going to pay for a booth? All that kind of stuff. And, like, see if you can trickle in one or two of those at a time. and if it's worth trying out. I think that's a great way to go about finding shows if you're not sure.
I think I would also, for the first year, I would probably put a cap at how much you're willing to spend for a show. Maybe make one exception if you're like really excited about some show and feel like you'd be really good. But I would still, I would like, I don't know, you pretty much didn't do any shows over $200 for a long time.
Yeah, I think 200, my first show was $200, but in the first year I did three shows. I did $200 show, the Bellevue show, which was about $50 for a single day, and it was considered like an art show, and then the Queen City Clay Bazaar, which was a $25 table, and they took 20%. Yeah. So that was like, that was my first year. I didn't spend that much money. I mean, what was that, $300 maybe? Well, depends on how much I sold at Queen City. But, you know, probably looking at like $450, something like that. Maybe $500. But pretty reasonable. I feel like this time of, not this time of year, this area of the country, like, I would say sticking to shows that are, I mean, you can start doing farmers markets in April. That's pretty reasonable. But I would say, you know, sticking to April to November, you know, maybe there's some December ones you can do, but if you can hold out and just make work until April, I think the April ones are gonna give you better results than doing shows in like February, March. Like, it's still kind of a slow period. I wouldn't want that to like what's the word, something with a discourage you. I didn't want that to discourage you, that feel like, oh man, like it's not gonna be a good year because my February show was not that great. But like, I don't know if people are ready to buy when the weather starts getting really nicer. So
yeah,
I feel like four to six shows, something like that, is pretty reasonable.
Yeah,
but I also don't know much about her situation, so I don't know. But
yeah. Okay, it says,
with family and all that stuff.
And the third one, it says, other markets mean traveling out of state. How do you deal with sales tax?
Ooh.
Call your Department of Revenue.
Yeah, Department of Revenue. So, yeah, whatever state you're going to look up the Department of Revenue. The, I know for Kentucky, I kind of like the way Kentucky does it. So, if you do a show that is, I don't know if it's juried or not, and they do this, but if it's a show that's designated with the state, the organizer will give you a sheet that is like for the event, and it's like from the Department of Revenue, and it's a way for you to report your sales from the show, and you can denote, okay, how much sales did you make, and then 6% sales tax in Kentucky. So you just, it's a flat 6% across all the states. So you don't have to figure it out by county and all that stuff. So it's kind of nice in that regard. You don't have to figure that out. I know some states are pretty crazy with the counties and all that. And they'll give you a form at the show, no matter if you're a Kentucky resident or not. And then I did it at this past show, and you can either, if you have a Kentucky ID number, you can just write your business name and write your ID number and send it to them. And then that's just saying, hey, I'm going to report it when it's time to pay my quarterly sales tax. But if you're a transient vendor and you don't have a state ID with Kentucky or whatever, you can just fill out the bottom and it's like you, your business name, you put your social on there because that's how it's tied to your, how you're going to pay the tax, you know, how the state will recognize you. I'm assuming you're a sole proprietor, but if you're not, like maybe you have a, you know, a business number, like a FEIN or something like that. But that's how they do it in Kentucky. If you're in Ohio, we do a, I say we, I don't live in Ohio, but I'm a transient vendor in Ohio, but I have a sales tax ID number. So I still declared with the Department of Revenue for Ohio as a transient vendor, and they give me a number. It's really easy to do that. I would assume most states are probably like that. You can just go to their state website, Department of Revenue, and look up like transient vendor or something like that, because you're temporarily being a salesperson in that state. You're conducting business in a booth, and it's short term. I did that for Indiana too, I think. And then they give you a tax number to use as like, you know, this is for your business and all this stuff. And then it depends on the state, like how often you need to report it. Indiana, before when I first declared with it, they made me report sales every single month, and I typically zeroed it out. And then when I did my one or two shows in the year, I had to declare them on those months and pay the sales tax. But yeah, I don't know. You've done a little bit of different sales lately. I mean, how are you doing it in California and Utah and all that right now?
I would prefer not answer that question because I haven't figured it out. So
what's the sales tax there? Do you know?
I just asked. It's like 7. Hold on. I have it on my square. I think it's like 7%. But also I think that if you make a under a certain
6.75%.
Yeah. I think that if you make under a certain amount, you don't have to report it, but I'm not positive. But I was
6.75 is in St. George. It says the Utah okay, yeah, state's
that sounds right.
Utah sales tax rate is currently 4.85%. Wow. The county sales tax is 0.35, and then St. George sales tax is 1%.
Yeah.
That's a pretty low sales tax for the state.
Yeah. Wow. So I will tell you when I figure it out. I literally just started selling here.
What about California? Like how'd you do that? Or what is the sales tax in California?
The sales tax in
California. Why am I doing this? I just need to Google this. I feel like I'm incriminating you.
I didn't even make any money in California. I mean, like $0.
Los Angeles County is 9.5%.
Yeah.
Remaining 56 incorporated cities have sales tax higher than that. Yeah, some of them it's like certain counties and or this is I guess this is cities. I don't know. It says like Beverly Hills and
yep.
County Burbank 10.25%. Yeah, and the way that I report for Ohio is because I do have shows in different counties. Usually it's only typically it's always Hamilton County and it's always a certain percentage. It's I think there's a 7.8%. And then if you're in, you know, Warren County, which is a little bit more north, and I do one show in Blue Ash, and that sales tax is you know a little bit higher. So what I do is when I record my sales, I'll just make note in my income that this was a show that I did in Warren County, so that when it gets time to report my sales tax for Ohio, I do it twice a year. So I get in there and I have to declare, I have to show my sales per county, and then I record the tax per county that I need to pay. So, so that the right county gets the right amount of money yeah. from it. So, I mean, I don't know how they would know if you didn't, because like the shows that I do in Ohio, nobody from Ohio has literally given me a sheet like in Kentucky. They don't give
me
a sheet.
I've never fucking gotten a sheet ever. Okay.
In Kentucky, they do that at pretty much every juried show that you're gonna do. Like if you do Woodland or you do Berea or the Kentucky Craft and Market, typically all the juried ones I do, they give you a sheet like as part of the vendor packet. They give you that because I'm guessing they're required by law to give it to you. The Department of Revenue requires it. I mean, it's on you, and then it's on you to record it and report it and all that stuff. So, but Ohio, I don't know how they would know whether you did a show in a certain state or not. I think some show organizers are required to report it to the Department of Revenue, like who's there, but they don't have your business name, I guess, and your legal name, but they don't really. You know, the organizers don't have your social, so they don't, they're not, I mean, they would have to put two and two together, yeah. I guess, from business name and all yeah. that stuff to figure that out. But, yeah, I mean, I think you could also talk to if you have a CPA, you talk to them about it. Like, hey, I'm selling at these shows in the state. Here's how I, you know, report my sales tax in the state for the shows I do, for the farmer's market and all that stuff. definitely collect sales tax when you're like selling at a show. Like, I think our products, you should always collect sales tax. And the way I was kind of thinking about this over time was, you know, some people are like, oh, if you pay in cash, it's included. But I'm just like, hey, if sales tax in Kentucky is 6%, I'm basically giving somebody a 6% discount on the item if I include sales tax. Like, somebody's got to pay it. Why do I need to pay the, why am I giving you a discount on this item, on every single item I sell? Whether it's you include it on every sale so that you avoid having to, you know, have that conversation with the customer. But I'm just like, I just deal with it. You know, if it's cash and somebody does it, I add the tax to it. Like, if it's a, I do that a lot lately. So if it's a spoon rest and it's $20 with tax in Kentucky, it's $21.20. So if I'm at a show and somebody has cash, I'll be like, okay, the spoon rest is $21.20 with tax. If you're paying in cash, we'll just round down to $21. So I include tax, but I round down a little bit. So I'm covering 20 cents of it, but, you know, just to make it easy. And also I don't have to fiddle with change and all that stuff. But that's the way I handle it. Some people on Square, you can actually do it where it includes the tax in the final cost. So if I did $20, it would just be $20 flat, and then it would remove tax off the front end of that and do the math for you. But in that case, you're giving them a 6% discount on the item, because you're going to report, you're going to pay Kentucky the 6%. So that's the way I like to do it. And if people don't use cash, I just, it stays the same. Like, they're still paying $21.20 for that spoon rest. As far as I know, there's not a way to proactively always remove the tax when it's a cash sale. I mean, you can manually remove the tax little by little on a sale if you want, but it just gets a little messy to do that. But
yeah,
that's the way I handle it. How was Washington? Did you have to do something crazy there? Because you were in Leavenworth, but you were also selling out of the shop.
Washington is the worst. They take... that's why I feel like I have it so good in Indiana, because it's like, Indiana's just one place. Like, when you have to put in your sales taxes every week, every month, it's like, how much did you make? How much are deductions? How much are this? In Washington, it's like, how much did you make in 4042 code? How much did you make in 4043 code? How much did you make in 4625 code? How much did you make in this? And those are all county codes, and they all like represent.
Sounds kind of like Ohio, but it sounds like it's more frequent than twice a year you're doing it.
Every month. Every month. Fucking month. Or every quarter. It depends. And so, like, when I would sell in Monroe, it would be one code, and when I would sell in Leavenworth, it would be another code. And so, thankfully, in Leavenworth, I just got a 1099 because it was central checkout. So that was nice. Easier.
So they pay the sales tax and everything like that.
Yeah. And technically, if you sell in certain counties, you're supposed to get business license for each county. It's fucking dumb as shit. Like,
it seems like there should be, and no state is the same either.
And no state is the same. It's like, if I did one sale in Seattle, downtown Seattle, I would have to buy a downtown Seattle business license. If I did one sale in Kirkland, I'd have to buy a downtown Kirkland business license. It was just awful.
And they're all different numbers, or do they all funnel up to your social or something like I'm guessing you still use your social security to
register. Yeah, I think register. I use my EIN, but yes.
Or your FEIN number or whatever.
But yeah, it was, dang. Oh God.
You would think that you could just use your FEI, you have a state business ID, a business license, and you can, it's transient to the different counties.
You would think. It's awful. You would think. Washington is the worst fucking state to do taxes in if you're a business. It is awful. I feel very prepared doing taxes in any other state just because of that. It was like.
Did you have to do similar things for income or?
I don't think, no, there's no income tax.
Oh, there's no income tax. Okay.
Yeah, that's why all their other taxes. You would think that a liberal state would make it kind of easy for you, but no. No, fuck no. Nope. 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 Healthcare, that was easy. But all the other
shit. You would think with, small business owners, they don't want to like give you hoops and hurdles and make it even more hard. You know, we're like five people in one. So, I mean, you got to figure this shit out somehow or know who to go to figure it out.
Yeah, that's why I don't think I'll ever do like a show in Seattle ever again or anything like that, just because I don't want to do that.
I think that maybe speaks to the point that you should probably talk to a CPA about this kind of stuff and just be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. I know I could be overthinking this, but what do I do in this situation? And who do I reach out to? So that you're like, that's their job, you know, taxes and sales tax and income tax and all that shit. Like,
yeah,
that's what they do. They give legal advice on this stuff. So,
and we don't. So what we're giving you today is thoughts, not advice.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, I mean, I could tell you what I have experienced from Kentucky, but yeah, you should talk to your CPA about the states. I don't even know how Tennessee does it. I've never sold in Tennessee, so I don't know how they do stuff. I know they don't have income tax from what I've heard, but
yeah,
sales tax, I'm not really sure. And if it's county, it's weird or anything like that. But
I know their sales taxes are fucking ridiculous. It's like 10%, yeah.
I would encourage you to talk to the CPA, but I wouldn't say don't use this as a prerequisite to say you have to have every single duck in a row before you apply for shows. Like you've already sold in some shows, so like you're figuring it out. I think it's okay to figure some of this stuff out as you're going. I mean, don't get like 3 years or 4 years down the road and figure it out, but like figure it out little by little and like build onto your knowledge and talk to the right people so that they can help you out. So
I have a small feeling that Tennessee is very similar to
Washington.
I am looking up their state. yeah. I have a feeling that 7%
they are sales tax.
7%, that's the state tax. And then they have the state FIPs, they have 47. So
local sales tax rate map. Proxy error. Okay, well, that doesn't help me at all.
Yeah, no, you have to go to the next one. Let me look up the one address that I know.
I mean, she's in Clarksville, so.
Okay. So. Oh, 343.
I mean, I'm sure she knows her. Hers is 9.5% in where she lives.
Okay, so yeah, unfortunately for you, Tennessee is one of those states that has a different tax rate. Oh. So like Munford County, where is technically where I live, I guess, is because that's my home address, is Tipton County, City of Munford, tax rate is 2.75, so you add that to the 7%, so it'd be 9.75, and then the code is 8407, so you would, when you would go into your taxes, you would go in and you would say that this is my tax code, and if you can afford a bookkeeper, this is why you should do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. And this says, like, I'm looking at tax rates in the county where she lives, the Clarksville, Tennessee. Local option sales tax, 2.5%, 100% of it goes to schools. State sales tax on unprepared food and food ingredients, 6%. So total rate of 8.5%. But if it's sales tax on all other tangible personal property, unless specifically exempt, 7%. So they have different based on the different type of item you're selling.
Yeah.
So it's 9.5% on pottery, I would guess, because it's not food.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so sorry. So sorry.
I think that's the drawback of the no income tax. They just make it more complicated on sales tax. They got to get their money elsewhere, right?
Oh, yeah. For real.
They got to get their money through the property taxes and the other taxes. Whew.
Yeah.
All right. We ended on taxes. How fun.
How fun.
Sandrine, if you have any questions about Kentucky, I'd be happy to share those with you. So I can share with you a list of shows. Actually, just share. So there was a There's another artist at the show that I did this weekend, Raina. She's a new, she actually works in clay, but she does Palmer clay earrings.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And she's in Kentucky. She just joined the artist program, with the Kentucky Crafter program, at the same time. So I've been kind of like chatting with her a little bit and stuff. And I just gave her a whole long list of shows that I've been building from like 2015 or 2016. And I was like, here's a list. The ones in bold are ones I've done. Italicized are ones I've thought about. And I'm happy to tell you anything and everything about any of these shows. So just let me know.
That's so funny.
Yeah, happy to share.
For sure.
It's hard to do that without like, because I bet that's overwhelming to get like a long list of stuff, but I'm like, this is everything.
But it's also super Follow helpful up. Too, because like it gives you a starting point, you know?
Yeah. And it's hard to know like what people are comfortable with, because, you know, some people, you know, I'm sure it's a big hurdle for doing outdoor shows for some people. Like the tent and what you need to get, and you got to worry about sidewalls, and you got to do weight. Like, it's a lot of stuff you got to, I wouldn't say it's a, it can be a hurdle, because there's just, and also your vehicle, like how limiting are you with the vehicle that you have to use? Like,
yeah,
can you actually bring all that stuff or not? And it can be challenging, you know. Let's say you have one vehicle and it's a sedan. How are you going to get all that stuff there? You're like, well, I just ruled out. I don't have any, I can't do any outdoor shows with tents because I can't fit in my car. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's not just easy peasy. Hopefully you got somebody, you know, that you can get a vehicle from and just figure it out and give it a chance. But
minivan.
Yeah. Once you got to travel and stay places and all that stuff, it definitely adds up. So I would also encourage you, like, stick around your area as much as you can, because that's going to help build your local customer base. I think it's definitely good to have people close to you to start and get those, get those customers first and foremost, because they're probably going to be more likely to be repeat customers for you than, you know, going all the way up to Lexington, which is like, you know, maybe that's 4 hours from you or 6 hours from you. Like, you know, how likely are you to come back and see those people again if it's not like the next year at that same show, you know?
Right.
So that's where the farmers markets and things like that build on top of one another. Alrighty, anything else we want to depart on today?
No, I just want to reiterate the fact that I've been in this podcast and I have my doors locked and my cat can go in and out of the van. Just really great. It's just really great.
Nice. Do you think he's going to be in there or outside?
I'm guessing
he's going to be outside.
Well, he was in there. He got out. I don't know. He might be in. Who knows?
I feel like you have to, he's not like a, when it sun's down, he's going to come inside, right? Like, you got to call him. You got to.
He sits outside that door and meows for me to come outside.
Oh, of the studio?
Yeah, so that I can take him on a walk.
Do you just walk around the, like, block or something? Or do you actually go
somewhere else and then you go? We walk across the street and down half the block and then into the parking lot. And then he runs around all the rocks. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not really
not the
a
busy
walk.
Street. The little, like, neighborhood street across.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's Tabernacle. It's a pretty busy street, but we always go after 11. Like 10 to 11, so there's no cars.
Okay.
But yesterday, I'm going to say he almost got hit by a truck, but he really didn't. He always waits for cars to come by. Like, he doesn't like cars, so he won't run out in front of them. So there are two cars going eastbound. And then after that, those two cars, he, like, crossed the street because I was across the street. And then another car turned going westbound, so he didn't, like, realize it was coming, and so he, like, starts running, and then he realized the car was there, and he, like, bolts. But
good thing he bolted to you, at least.
Yeah, but I think the truck would have slowed down. He wasn't going that fast, you know, so.
Yeah, they just turned.
He's pretty good about it, so.
Yeah, I was wondering if he was, like, a walk-alongside kind of cat, or if he was a, but, I mean, from walking around, with him around here, he's more of a you go in front and he'll catch up kind of deal.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Or he'll like run past you and then slow down and then he'll run past you and then, but he doesn't definitely like has a place he wants to go and that's the places that we go. So. And he has to see me pretty much all the time. Or else he'll just stop. Like if he doesn't see me, then he's like, who's that? I don't know. I'm going to go this way. So, I try to keep invisible eye contact. Yeah.
I mean, he's easy to see at night being a white cat. So
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Babs. Right. You can never see Babs at night. She was like a,
all you can and see I bet she'd eyes. Just be sitting there like a loaf and just like, you'd be calling for her. She just no reaction.
Basically. And like, but when she did, she runs, she's the cutest fucking runner. She would like her little chubby loafiness would just run. Oh, so stinky cute. I can't even.
I was looking back at my photos from this time last year because I was looking in Sika stuff. I think I was looking for photos of the two of us if we had a picture together from demos or something like that. And I saw a picture of Babs in the basement sitting on the chair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, Babs.
Miss Babs.
What is Babs doing? How's she doing? Have you talked to... She's with Sarah, right?
She's living her best fucking life, man. Sarah treats her so good. Like, she gets good food. She gets to be on the couch all the time. She gets to go on the front porch and look at all the cars. She, like, snuggles up with Sarah every night and watches TV. Like, she loves Sarah. Loves Sarah. So...
Does she go outside that, like, she goes on the porch. Did she ever really venture? She didn't really venture outside that much on a regular basis, though, right?
I think she wants to go outside. I think that's why
she's. But she's not going to be, like, she's not going to be, like, strolling the neighborhood kind of deal. She would just.
Kind of like me.
Go within a house or a couple house.
When we were at Sarah's house, she would always, like, go in their backyard and sit in the weeds. Like, you know? So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Miss Babs. So cute.
Babs.
Miss Babbles.
Babarooski.
Babarooney. Yeah. So that's the Babs update.
All right.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the next time I'll see you will be
Monday.
Tuesday. Tuesday evening.
Yep.
If the next time
and then
you,
we'll see everybody in Encica.
The next time you go to the grocery store, please get me a pack of Red Bulls.
I don't know why when you said give me a pack, I was thinking you were going to say like cigs or something.
Please give me a pack of American Spirits Light
Give
blue.
Me a pack of Marlboro Reds.
No, I would like a pack of Red Bulls, just regular... 12 ounce.
How many come in a pack? Is it a 4-pack?
4-pack, and you're paying for it, or the podcast can pay for it. But I'm driving, so you get to pay for it.
I'll fucking pay for it. Well, Rachel will pay for it. She'll go to this. I don't really go to the store these days, but
yeah. Cool.
Okay, I need to make a note of that actually. So
should I text get Rachel? Red Bull. Should I text Rachel? I require a pack of Red Bull.
Yeah, you can text her.
Okay, I'll text her. Sweet. Yeah.
All right, thanks everybody for listening. We will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Hey everybody, thanks for listening to another episode of Wheel Talk. This podcast is made possible through the contributions of all of our listeners who always ask us great questions, leave us reviews, and contact with us through social media. Thanks to all the fellow makers as well who take time to be interviewed and share about their lives and businesses.
And thank you to Ashley from Boldover Ceramics and Lindy from Lindy Garner Ceramics for their assistance on the Wheel Talk podcast Instagram. You are invaluable. Thank you to everybody.